This is a recording from Reunions Weekend 2011 at the University of Virginia, made possible by the UVA Alumni Association. This session is a panel discussion featuring the class of 1996.
And I want to welcome all of y'all and say thanks for coming up, and thank you to our panel. You got an incredibly impressive description of the panel members, half of which is not true. So there'll be a contest to see if you can tell which are just complete fabrications. We were about to say. So welcome. You've also probably gotten a note card. And that note card, a note card that's like a regular index card. And that is if you would like to jot down a question, our fabulous volunteer will hustle by you and take it, particularly if there's any embarrassing information about any of the panel members you want to send me in confidence, I'll be sure to work it into the routine. So, but please just, what you can do is write it down and then hold it up, and that will be a sign for them to pick it up. So we also, as I said, we have the description. We're going to kind of launch right into the questions because as fun as it is for us to all sit around and talk about ourselves, we thought we'd get right into this discussion. How many of you out there are spouses or significant others who did not go to the University of Virginia? So are here. There we go. See, I'd like to applaud that. I have a special spot in my heart for y'all because what happens, of course, every 5 years or so is my wife and I, and my wife's back there, and I have the discussion, which is whether or not my wife is going to join me at reunions. Largely, that's based on the fact that she knows that I'll probably go to St. Martin's and revert to age 21. In my mind, not so much in my body. And so the question becomes is she going to come along and risk being with an idiot? Or will she try and come in, contain the damage? And so, thankfully, to the greater Charlottesville community, and of course to me, my wife is here. So what we're going to do is try and get a conversation going with you kind of about how life has gone on. Because coming back to Charlottesville, it's so easy to come back and see things that trigger memories that you haven't had in 15 years. Oh, that sounded bad. In a long time and remember things ago. So it's always interesting to kind of get a feel for, as you're coming back, what sort of things have influenced you and really helped set your life direction. So you have the descriptions of the panelists, but I'd like to introduce everyone, and then we'll get right into the questions. So this is Phil Cox, Leonard McCants, I am Quincy McDonald, Sarah Neer, Maria Elena Pilado Green Esquire, and Sarah Allison. So welcome to everyone. So the first question I'm going to ask you folks is, what do you miss most about being a college student? So why don't we start with my friend Leonard? Please speak into your microphone.
Hello. I hate talking into a microphone. Sound gayer than I am. I think I miss...
Oh, jeez.
You're starting us off great.
I think, you know, there's something about college where you don't care, like... Not you don't care, but you are carefree, right? You don't have any bills, you don't have any cares, you don't have any... family, you don't have any worries, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what is the most amazing thing about being in college. And one of the most amazing things about being here was that you are surrounded by so many amazing people. And I can say amazing three more times in the next sentence. it's just a beautiful place, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of, it's bucolic, it's green, it's great bus system.
Proud former UTS driver.
Never crashed. Never crashed. That I will tell you. Or this group. I don't know. It's amazing. Amazing, amazing.
There you go. Sarah E.
I would have to second the carefree element of being in college, because while it's wonderful to see everyone, and oh my gosh, I'm recognizing people that I didn't even see. A lot of us, not all of us, but a lot of us have young children right now, and you have this sort of post-traumatic stress look about all the people who've been like sleep deprived for years, and they're just so happy to be out at 5 at night and not having to do anything related to their children. So I think that that is one of the things that I miss the most about being in college, is just having all this time to waste and not have to worry about it. So I think that that would probably be...
It was just, we were walking around, and I was remembering that I used to be able to walk a lot more, obviously, than I can now, because the hills at the University of Virginia grounds keep growing every single year I come back. There's one more stair added to every staircase that I went up as a student, so the ability to do that. So let me go to Phil. Phil, what are your first impressions of being back at UVA and kind of what the campus is like? I don't know how many of you come back regularly.
I was actually, I actually lived in Charlottesville for 4 years after I graduated. I started my business here, ran my first campaign in Elmore County. And so I've spent, you know, the better part of the last 15 years doing political work in Virginia. So I'm here a lot. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the university grow and change. I've been involved now kind of helping to appoint leadership and have sort of seen it from a different side than being a student. I love this place. When people ask me about it, I say, you know, Charlottesville's sort of my home. And I grew up in Boston, so, you know, it's one of those things. But
you don't sound like you're from Boston.
Well, you know, doing campaigns in rural parts of the country will beat that out of you, I guess. I think we're uniquely blessed to have spent 4 or maybe 5 years here, if you were here, or if you went to law school or business school. It's unique. I travel a lot. I'm on the road, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, and, you know, I'll be in the strangest places in California and New Mexico and Texas, and people ask you where you went to school, and you say UVA, and they're like, oh, wow, that place is awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, the reputation's out there, and it was clearly, for me, it was the best, you know, really probably the best 4 years of my life. I would do it over and over again if I could. You know? Groundhog Day.
All right, Maria, your turn. What? Same thing. What's your first impressions being back and kind of seeing classmates again? All of you beautiful people.
This is the one question I didn't want. Let's see. It's, you know, we just got here this morning, so I'm still digesting. And I have to say that I'm a little bit brain dead because our almost five-month-old kept us up last night. So people are looking good, you know. You can't pick a better day. I mean, the weather cooperated. It's absolutely beautiful out there. And, I think I'm excited. I'm excited to be here, take a little break from the other two that we left behind. So our hands are light. My husband's in the crowd, so he's he's on duty. He's on duty.
So we're fortunate to have a lot of very interesting kind of career paths up here, too, and life choices. So I'm going to start with my good friend Sarah Neer and say, what aspect of your life today would most surprise the person you were at UVA?
Probably that I still live here. I left and came back, and it's not that I didn't think I would come back, but I've been back for 9 years, which is a really long time, and I'm really surprised that I've been able to have multiple jobs here in that time and really grow and do different things within the small confines of Charlottesville. And so that's probably the biggest thing, and probably that I didn't go to law school. That would be the other thing, because I don't know how many of you took the LSAT.
That's me too,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking I might do it one day.
Well, you know, when they force you, they say, take the LSAT, you know, while you're here, and I did, And then I got a job, and I started getting a paycheck, and I said, no, I'm not going to go back for 3 years. So I went to business school part-time, and that was great because my company paid for it. And that just sort of precluded law school. But now I'm back, and I'm a part-time PhD student, so I just continue to go to school. That's probably the other thing, is that I'm still in school, and so I do go to the a cappella concerts here. I do go to the speakers, and so if you're looking for a fun time to come back that's not a reunion, find it, you know, come Parents Weekend when the VGs are singing or something like that, because it really will bring it all back, and it's a lot of fun.
Bill, why don't you add yours? I want everyone to say, what would most surprise the person you were in college about you right now?
I guess that I'm doing what I'm doing, and I really had no, probably like some people in this room, I had no idea what I was going to do when I graduated. I got a job offer to go do investment banking on Wall Street, and like, I don't know why I got that job offer. Like, I went through on-grounds interviewing, and I interviewed well, and knew very little about finance, and got the offer, and it was sort of a stark, you know, sort of a pretty serious life moment to say I'm not going to, I had no money, I had, you know, debt, and had, you know, a pretty good job offer to go up to New York, turned it down. So I think just what I've ended up doing and the fact that it's all worked out, I think would have been a surprise. I was law school, med school, business, whatever. I mean, it was just, I didn't know what I wanted to do and figure it out. And I think that's what's most interesting about being back, is getting to talk to people and kind of seeing how life kind of bumps you in one direction or another. And you know, I meet so many successful, either in business or in family or in life, you know, people who've graduated from UVA. It's just, it's an exciting community to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, why don't you chime in?
I definitely think that if I were going to answer back when I was in college, I would definitely think I'd be more credentialed than I am right now, because I was going to go back to law school or get a PhD or something like that. Instead, I moved to Paris and stayed there for 3 years, and then London and stayed there for 3 years, and then like met the person I was going to marry, and by then I was working and really liking my job. And so the serendipity was really fun. Like, it's not a bad thing to move to those two cities and like fall in love with someone and then like be working in a job you really like. But I now still, this thing is nagging at me, like, I'm the least educated person in my family, and I should, like, get another degree. But, yeah, I mean, I think that would be the thing. I mean, I think that my idea of what I was going to do when I was in college was so misguided and ill-formed. Like, I had no idea what life was going to be like. That's another thing that's kind of great about being here, is that being back here is you kind of remember who you were then and all the things that you associated. I mean, one of the things that we were talking about earlier that's so crazy is that none of us had cell phones. None of us had, like, any of the... just before we came over here, I was trying to get in touch with an ex-boyfriend from college, and I was like, oh, he was in Dublin 6 hours ago, because on Facebook I could see his, like, status update. There's, like, no mystery left. You're not like, I wonder where they are. Like, oh, that's what you're doing. So I feel like that's... different.
See, the thing that would amaze my college self is that I now actually do running for exercise. The things that you will attempt to do to stay in some semblance of shape. And to myself in college, I would run when something large was chasing me. And then I wouldn't do it very well. So the sort of things that you discipline yourself to do a little bit of changed mine.
Like,
what about
old, being old? You have to
I know. we'll be old next year. Maria, what about you?
Well, I definitely, you know, it is interesting coming back thinking about what I was going for. You know, I was in foreign affairs. I was thinking maybe I'd work for the government, be a diplomat or something like that. And it's so different. You know, I'm running my own business. Never did I ever think I would start my own business. And, let alone have two blonde girls. I'm a mother of two blonde girls. it does shape you, your time here, but it definitely doesn't define you. And I think that, you know, to piggyback also on, to incorporate another question that you guys had given us, that, you know, it did influence you, but I think at the time when I was here, I was stressed out. It was unnecessary stress about grades and things and what I wanted to do. And it really doesn't define you. It does shape you. It influences you. But, you know, it's just 4 years, and you can do many things after that, you know. So, so I became a business owner, and it's cool. Yeah.
Your turn, Leonard.
You know, from the moment that I was like ninth grade, I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to be be on television and be like a broadcaster, but then I decided to become a print writer. And it took me a long time to kind of get into the Cavalier Daily, but my friend Stan back there, thank you, Stan, for not writing at one story and making me go down and do it myself. And so actually, I thought I was going to be a journalist when I left here. And here I am working for Levi's and working at Ford Models. I would never have imagined that that would have been the case ever. And frankly, it's kind of amazing that I could do that. I keep saying amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Now, what you've just heard through what Leonard was saying is that lots of folks here up on the panel have done one thing, moved to do another thing, to do another thing. And so one of the questions I wanted to ask you guys is, especially now in this economy and trying to reinvent ourselves, what's a sign that you found the right career? And conversely, what's a sign that you have found the wrong career? Hi, Phil. It's great being the moderator because you can ask tough questions and then just look for someone to answer.
We were talking about this on the way down, and I still wake up every morning and I'm excited about what I do. Mm-hmm. And so, some days are better than others, but I sometimes pinch myself when I have time to reflect, which is pretty rare, I learned nothing, absolutely nothing in college that was transferable to my actual profession. I thought I could do it, and I went ahead and, you know, made a lot of mistakes along the way. I lost a bunch of campaigns my first, you know, 5, 7, 8 years out there. I tried to scratch my way and build a business and eventually kind of figured it out. And so I know I'm in the right spot, and it's new and interesting and different every day, and it challenges me every day. And some days I'm a little bit more stressed out than others and not maybe having fun every day, but I think if you continue to learn in the career that you're in, I think once you start doing the same thing over and over again, I think that's when I get bored and I look for something else. And so I think if you can get up every morning and be excited about what you're doing, for me, I've talked to a lot of friends who went to UVA who are lawyers who are very successful, and they get to a certain point and maybe they don't love it. And I think I feel like very blessed and lucky that I still do love it. So mm-hmm. I don't know, still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
Are we grown up?
I guess. No, we're not grown up. We're not grown up. So anyway.
Maria, I want to hear what you have to say about this.
Let's see. I was trying to remember. Can you repeat the question?
Sure.
Sorry, I'm having a...
Could we please? Please get the spotlight on Maria. What we're talking about is that, for a lot of us, it's kind of to what Phil was saying, I guess we should be in our career now. Because we have reached that age where we should know everything about what we're doing.
Connected. Actually, I liked this question. Oh, my goodness. Okay, it's hot. I liked this question because I thought about this, and I remember the jobs I had leading up to starting my business. I was always like, gosh, I want to find something where that I can throw myself into, really just be passionate about and, like, want to, make mistakes and not worry, get back up and keep going. And because I had some colleagues that
I was working for, that they were like that. And I always was like, I want to be like that, because I enjoyed my jobs, but it was never like something, you know, I did a good job, but I never wanted to lose sleep over something about my job. Or, and I really have found that with this business. Like and sometimes it's to a fault, you know, sometimes it is. And I will get, stressed out, you know, overly so, or, snap at Dave, or, you know, whatever. But I love what I'm doing. I mean, I am passionate about it. I want to throw myself into it. I have ideas of how to grow it, of what else to do. And so, and that's really why I've kept up with it. You know, we have three kids, and, I don't work full time at this point, but, somehow we managed to juggle it all, and I'm working part-time. But I make it work because I want to make it work, you know, and I want to keep going. And so it's really, it's awesome. It's awesome. So I feel very lucky to be in this place. So anyways.
I have been told I'm next. So I think there's two things. The first is that I think everything we've all done to this point, we've learned from. And I think that if at this point in your life you're doing something where you can use most of what you've learned, whether it's with your children or your family or your work, I think that makes you happy, because you've been able to, at least I've been able to, I started out selling Tide, you know, it wasn't that dramatic, but I learned how to influence people. And then I went to a foundation and I started selling scholarships, which was a much more fulfilling thing to sell and to raise money for. And now I sell a future, because I sell business school, and it is an opportunity for people that not many other things are. I just came back from Beijing and Shanghai, and people were getting beat up and arrested while I was there, and every single person from China I offered admission to this year accepted my offer. They need to get out. And that is a big impact I feel like I can make, and I think we can all look for those impacts we can make on individuals or children or whatever we might do. But I think if you can find that impact and think about that impact and reflect on it, when you get some time, you'll be happy in what you're doing.
I think also, I was talking with someone I work for. It seems like the businesses I work for keep getting smaller. I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing, but I sure like it. And one of the things that I've noticed over time, because I'm used to be with McGraw-Hill and with Pearson, and now I'm with kind of a small little family-owned publisher over in Philadelphia, is that I'm a lot more cognizant of what I cannot put up with. And I think one of the things that's influenced me over time is, and, you know, talk about what would surprise you most about currently your college self and what other folks were saying, is that I was paying much more attention to what was the next step. And I was doing well if I was well underway, and what age am I now versus what age should I have been when this happened, and am I in that next spot in management, or all those other things. And then if you're like me, one day you wake up and you say, life is too short for that. And trying to find things like, if I never have to listen to my beloved former CEO do another quarterly investor report speech for the rest of my life, it will have been too soon. Tears of sadness. But I think, so that's in addition to really finding passion when you're there, I think if you're able to be comfortable enough at some point to realize what you really just don't want to put up with anymore, and you're willing to take a step to do that, that's been important for me too. What do you think, Leonard?
Can you repeat the question again?
Would you like two microphones, Leonard?
No.
You need to do whatever you want, Leonard. You don't have to answer the question.
You need more time.
Extemporaneously.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm talking about.
What's a sign that you found the right career, or a sign you found the wrong career?
Thank you. Good question. I've had a lot of jobs, I feel like, over the course of my post-collegiate career or post-collegiate life. I guess, you know, in the very beginning, it was the next step, right? It was, okay, I've been here for two years, I want something else. I've been here for 2 years, I want something else. And I got bored, like you were saying, Phil, or you felt like you wanted to go to the next step or become a manager or whatever it was. For me, transitioning from journalism to, I did PR for a while. That was because there was more money in it. And this guy offered me like twice my salary. I was like, hell yeah, I'm gonna give me the cash. But then it was awful. Like I was there for 4 months and it was miserable. I hated it. And I happened to stumble into the modeling thing. I took a step down, became an assistant again, learned a crap ton, and then started doing it again. But after 8 years of, you know, telling people no and walk like this and your skin's a little off. have you tried proactive? It became, you know, and it's like, okay, how much more can I really do? You know, I mean, how many more people can I sign in San Francisco who want to go to New York or Milan when it's San Francisco and you're not going to go to New York or Milan? 8 years was enough, you know? And so, just like what Sarah was saying, I happened to find the perfect job where I could book models and, you know, book photographers and hair and makeup artists and stylists, people that I've worked with before, and also help with copywriting where I'd been a writer before, and help working with, you know, people in the business that I've been working for actually, God, how many years has it been? So actually, I had a perfect kind of storm of jobs for me. It's actually kind of amazing. And it's been since January, and I can't believe it's already June. It's almost been 6 months that I've been there. And it's been great. And working for a big company again, because when I was in San Francisco at Ford, it was five people in the office, and you can't quite grow from being the only men's agent to what, right? There's already a director of the office. Like, I can't be the director of myself. And there's only so much money you can make in San Francisco, so you couldn't make any more money. It's like, I got to get out, you know? Mm-hmm. That's it. It was amazing.
I was just going to say that I remember one of Maria's very first jobs, which was when we were living in Paris together. She was working at The Gap, and I was working at this trade show company, which was so far from my dream of, like, me being Ernest Hemingway sitting and, like, writing in Paris my novel. But I was taking a subway out to the suburbs of, which were not charming, and working, selling event space in, like, a food ingredients technology show in French when I didn't really speak French. And so it was, like, such a demoralizing, like, come down, humbling. Didn't sell anything, but I was desperate to get my papers to stay in France, so I kept telling people that I worked for that I really wanted to stay there because it was so fabulous. And then the day that I got my papers, and they were like, so that means you're going to sign on for another six-month contract here. And I was like, great. And I remember our offices had these little dividers that you could see plexiglass through the other four people who were in the office, and so they could see everything that was happening. I climbed under my desk to cry because I didn't want anyone to see me. And I was like, this has got to end. Luckily, one of my great Lexi came to visit, and she was like, you got to get out of here right now. Like, you've got to quit your job and stay here, like, however you can, but don't do this job. And so the long, long story is I stopped doing that, and then I ended up at 25 going to get free, working for free at Newsweek, which was like kind of, again, sort of humbling. This process is definitely a process of elimination, so knowing when you're in the right job is knowing when you're not miserable anymore. And I feel like that's kind of a low bar, but then you can, I mean, it's not, it's like you get there, you do get there, and I love my situation right now. Like, I couldn't be happier than I am writing for Vanity Fair. I really do feel like I'm very happy with that, which is such a weird feeling since I've spent so much of my time, like, generally griping about things. So I think that it's, like, kind of doesn't leave me that much to complain about. But it's also so fun to hear you talk about that because I completely, we were in Paris, definitely not living the dream. You know?
So. Well, I have to, it's funny because I remember you would be so, we're getting personal here. We haven't caught up in a while. Yeah. Oh, no. No, but I was so jealous of Sarah because she was getting a decent paycheck. Yeah. I mean, granted, you were way out there and would come, leave early and come back when the sun was down. But meanwhile, I'm like, you know, nanny for a French family doing The Gap and I'm scraping by but I got to walk the city and you got the money. So we just needed to, yeah, we needed, if we could go back, we'd do it differently.
something, have a better strategy.
It's kind of interesting, and talking about careers in both new kind of explorations and stuff that didn't quite work out the way you thought it would and stuff that worked out much better than you thought it would. I'm kind of interested, going back to UVA, there's so many things here that inspired you to make some of the decisions you made. And people, I'd be interested, what's the most, as you look back at your time at UVA, what kind of class or activity from your time at UVA has been the most surprising benefit to your life and or career? Because I remember I took Professor Corte's cinema as an art form. I won't be completely honest about why I chose to take that course. It seemed real easy, and you got to watch movies. It seemed like, and it turned out not to be very easy, but you did get to watch movies. I don't know what these students do now that they don't have the huge video disc like a library. I went to Clemens yesterday to be in that genealogy service, and I asked, I walk as the chairs are long gone and the little cubicles of entertainment, and now there's stuff is like, apparently there's a film center a floor below, and I asked them if they still had the video discs. She looked at me like I should be in the library. And said, "No, sir." When they call you sir, you know you've just said something very dumb. But but that course has been such a blessing later on, because I think one of the things, and the president was talking a little about this in her presentation earlier, but one of the greatest benefits I think from UVA is the ability to talk with intelligent people. And it's something I talk with authors who are the experts in the world on any given subject, which I am not. And the ability to talk with intelligent people and have cultural references that you can talk about with folks, that course, I've pulled stuff back from that course over and over and over again. So that would be my example. But Phil?
I would say, I think two things. One, on the academic side, having to present, go through the process of an honors thesis, your fourth year, for those of you that had to do that. And I was a history major. I wrote my thesis on welfare reform. Which was, I guess, there was a lot going on at the time, but having to, something to your point, having to sit there in a room with about a dozen people and who are very sharp and whose job was really to pick apart your argument. I think that was an important experience for me. And then also in sort of the extracurricular side, I got involved, as I'm sure many of you did, in Madison House, and ended up as a program director. Managing a bunch of my peers. And I've never had any formal management training, but my entire career has been, it's been incredibly important. And when I started out and I managed a governor's race when I was 25, and I was a terrible manager. It was absolutely horrible. And I look back at that and, learn from those experiences, and by the time I ran another governor's race when I was 35, I sort of was better. But I look back at some of those extracurricular experiences. I was involved in a fraternity. I was president of my fraternity. And, those sorts of things are transferable to, future jobs and business. And, you sort of got your first taste of them here at UVA.
So Phil stole my practical one, which was Madison House, because I manage volunteers too, and it really was very good learning. So I'll say one that's more fun. I took Greek mythology in this very classroom. I don't know if anyone else did. Yeah? With the professor that looked like Geraldo Rivera. You guys remember him? Okay, so he's still in town. Every once in a while I'll see him, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's Geraldo. Oh, wait, it's our Greek mythology professor. And I went to Greece a few years ago, and if anyone hasn't been to Greece, it should be at the top of your list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. And I was on this bus tour to see the Oracle of Delphi, and this guy on the bus said, who won the war between Zeus and Apollo or something like that? And the guide was like, they weren't real. And I was glad I knew that. So, I didn't feel so stupid. But I think that's kind of what Quincy said, right? Being in a place like this where people actually do take classes like that, humanities classes, they do, even if you go to the comm school and even if you're in the engineering school, you had credits outside of that that you took. And you can speak intelligently to anyone, anywhere in the world. And I, trust me, as I see thousands of applicants each year from other schools, that's not true of every other university. And I think we're really lucky to have gotten that, that we mostly probably got not so much from the classes, but from being leaders in those extracurricular activities, because everywhere else they had faculty chaperones with them and running the meetings and running things, and we didn't have that, and I think we're very lucky for that.
I have a slight flip, I think, to this in terms of the way that I'm thinking about it. One, I just remember coming to sort of feeling so ill-prepared when I came to the University of Virginia, because I grew up in a really small town, working class. The history teachers were the football coaches who were doing this, like, basically so they could just, like, be a football coach. And I got to take – I was taking our American history from 1945 to the present, which was always, like, the thing that you got at the end of the year, like, when you were in high school. You never really made it that far. So this is the kind of stuff that you should know because you're in the world and you're a somewhat educated person. The TA was like, so the New Deal, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I don't know what she's talking about. Like, I had no idea what the New Deal was when I got to the University of Virginia. And I was like, that is insane. How did I end up being, like, completely uneducated before I got here? And then when I got here, I do feel like I used my time somewhat well. But I also took a Native American poetry class, which is a very good thing to do. Not something you should do if you've never taken Shakespeare or anything else that's, like, in the canon of literature, because I was, like, all about busting out the canon. I didn't want to learn anything that was, like, really traditional. I wish that we had, like, a stricter core curriculum when I was in college. So the answer is not what helped me. The answer that I have is, like, what I would have done slightly differently, because I can't pretend that, like, I made perfect choices when I was in at the university. But I definitely know what the New Deal is now, and I'm much more educated. But I also think, like, this is all just serendipity, and you're never going to come out with a perfect education no matter where you are. But I think that I also learned something from taking a Native American poetry class, which is that my daughter is never going to do that. I'm going to make her take Shakespeare and, like, all that other kind of stuff before she's allowed to, like, futz around with that kind of thing.
Now I'm going to turn to the amazing Leonard and ask the tough question, the hard question. Well, you can answer that question too, but the question I have, kind of going with Sarah's point, is what was your biggest regret from your time at the University of Virginia? Take it away, Leonard.
I didn't study hard enough. Did not study hard enough. I did go to class, but I never read anything. And I think that was my biggest regret, is I didn't read enough. And I think if I bought all those frickin' books, and I loved to have all them, and I spent all the frickin'
awesome
money,
books.
It was so amazing. Those books were so amazing. Never read them. Yeah, books. Like iPads or something like that.
Yes, Phil, they do. I publish them.
You can read them on your Kindle.
And they're all available for sale.
Yeah, they are.
My biggest regret was that. I think I spent too much time, like, driving buses and not reading.
Maria, why don't you go?
You know, I think about this, and I wish I would have maybe gotten to know my teachers more. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, my major, I had a lot of big lecture classes, so that was difficult to kind of get to know them, but I did get to know Donald Shaw, who was a Spanish literature teacher who's still here, and he was amazing. But I think that I would have done that, and I also would have done something with music, because I do a lot with music now in my program. And I've come to find that I really, really love music. I've always loved it, but I think if I would have done something with music, maybe even tried out for an a cappella group or something. Shout out there for my friend Todd. But those two things I would have done differently.
I would have taken another language. I just think that the university teaches those wrong. I think nobody's going to get up at 8 a.m. as a second, third, or fourth year. And this is actually something I continue to talk to the university about. They probably are sick of me. But if they did them in three-hour blocks on Monday afternoon, I would have totally taken another language. And I think that it's a problem with the university, sort of to your point about, like, not enough restriction. Sometimes I didn't have to take a language because I'd placed out with high school and APs. And I really wish that I had, and I think I'd be better when I travel and everything now.
Unlike Leonard, I'm going to take the opposite. I would have studied less. Okay. it was a competitive environment. You want to do well. I look back, and I was like, really? I was getting stressed out about, some midterm or some final. I mean, Leonard. You were always happy, though. You're having a good time.
Someone's got to drive the bus.
Right. Looking back 15 years, what are the best memories of college? I remember some lectures from some professors like Ed Ayers and others. But mostly what I remember are the relationships that established with our friends that are, lifelong relationships. I wish I would have invested more time and met more people, more different people, and really gotten more involved in the university community. I think that's probably my biggest regret. One other thing I would have done differently, too. I'm listening to Paris, and I would have done a semester abroad. I mean, I think that's one thing, looking back, we were talking about that this morning. I mean, what a unbelievable, unique opportunity offered in your academic career, and I never took advantage of it. So,
kind of looking forward, what is the best, one of the best things about what you do currently for your career, Sarah?
I think one of the best things that I do. I'm a journalist and I write for mostly for Vanity Fair, and it means that I can call anyone and ask them anything. And it's just such a great, feeling to just think, well, I just need a phone number. I need to find a phone number. And you can just figure out, you can just explore anything you want. And it's also, what's great about it is it doesn't ever really feel like a job to me because it's so not structured in that way. And every time I've decided that, every time I've been sort of tempted to go and do something else, like I went on a interview years ago at a hedge fund, and I was just like, money, I want to make more money. And I walked in and I was just like, my God, they're all really working here. Like, they're really working. And I just kind of went back to the newsroom, and everyone was like a child, and I just like, this is what I meant to do. Like, this is definitely what I meant to do. So I feel like that's my favorite thing is just like that it's so open and free form, and you can kind of take any line of inquiry, and should be responsible with that. Obviously, you can't just like call up someone and be like, I need to know if you really did kill your wife. But that's what I like about it. So.
I guess I am my own boss, so that's nice. But obviously with that comes a lot of responsibility. So I do get to shape my schedule, and that's really nice when you have kids, because I can kind of work around them, and be there for them and be available. So, when it comes to a work-life balance, we were talking about this earlier with some friends, which is all relative, obviously, for each person and each family, but I feel like in our family we do strike a balance the majority of the time. We're not always in balance, but and I think it's because of my flexible schedule, and my husband has a flexible schedule, And, you know, if, and I do have the decision-making power of whether I, you know, decide to maybe grow or not, you know, and right now I haven't. I've just been in a holding pattern because I like my life right now as far as the time I have with my children and the time I have to do my thing. So, there's a lot of, flexibility with that.
Yeah, I was thinking, my favorite part of the day is when I get to talk to authors. And I think about my great parts of my job are very similar to great parts of my life in general, which is experiences. It's having an opportunity to grow or learn or feel something, you know, through having conversations or times with other folks. And these people are brilliant, neurotic people, my authors. I try to cultivate a guilt complex as much as humanly possible in my authors. But they are incredible folks who do amazing things and probably could be making a lot more money doing something else. And so whenever you're around someone who teaches, because that's what they're called to do, that is just, it's an inspiring thing and almost takes away from the fact that I believe Excel is a torture device that was created specifically to make me feel like an idiot. They keep revising it every year, and it keeps getting worse.
Next. What about you, Phil?
You have to get that out.
What's the question?
Yeah.
Did I make you lose your track? What's the best part about what you do?
How do you do a VLOOKUP?
Huh?
A VLOOKUP. How do you do a
VLOOKUP? Oh, I know how to do VLOOKUP.
Okay. We're having Excel, which I love talking about Excel.
I just didn't think that was going to come up on this panel. I guess, you know, I've worked with a lot of politicians, which can be a four-letter word to some people. But on occasion, you know, you get to affect positive change, like good things happen, and you elect good people, and they do what they said they were going to do, and you get to be a part of that process. And so I look back, and you know, I feel like, you know, I've given a lot of my life, given up most of my, you know, worked many, many long hours to elect people who I believe in, and you know, and for the most part, they've justified that work, and I think looking back, that's the best thing when things happen that you've worked for and you see it really affect and change people's lives. So.
I work in the modeling industry, for goodness sakes, you know, so. Saying yes to some kid, you know, like, oh, you're really cute, come on over. But I guess when that good-looking kid comes over and does a good job and does Vanity Fair, Abercrombie & Fitch, or, you know, gets a good campaign or makes some money and they feel really good about themselves and you feel really good about them, and that's probably the best part. I mean, working at Levi.com, it's like, you get all my samples, you know, it's like, yay, all my clothes are here. And I can shoot them all. And they turn out great. I mean, I work in such a silly field.
It's not silly. I mean, I guess this is, sometimes people give me bad things because I work at a business school. And obviously, not everything in the business world has gone all that well lately. But you create jobs. I mean, you really do, and I'm a big believer in that. The best part of my job is getting to see people create new businesses and create jobs and really change the way people live in parts of the world where, you know, just by starting a company, you can change the lives of 100 people overnight. That's really the best part. And then actually getting to go to that country and see what they're doing is very cool. Plus, I get to judge people. admissions is a fun job. One of my colleagues calls us the crushers of hopes and dreams. And sometimes that's true, but we also get to change people's lives positively as well. And if you want to learn how to do Excel, per Quincy, and other things, I do have executive MBA programs, and just by 30-second plug, I'll let you in, because, you know, I know you, and you don't even have to take the GMAT. I'll waive that for you, so come see me. But there's one that travels around the world and one that meets here, and you can enjoy them and come back and visit us.
You can learn about Excel in Peru.
There you go. Brazil, but yeah.
There you go. Pretty good. All right, let's, now that you are all wizened, perfect people, I'm the moderator. Where was I going with that? Exactly.
Remind people they can ask questions.
Yes, please. What we're going to do is I'm going to give us final questions, then I'm going to actually, we're going to make a change of pace. We're actually going to open it up to the audience because that sounds scary. The first is, if you could go back and give yourself in college one piece of advice, knowing all that you know now, what would that piece of advice be? Sarah Ellison. If you laugh while I'm asking the question, you are automatically.
Well, I see some people are trying to leave, and I'm not going to let them do that. So that was what I was distracted by. But now that you ask me, what would be the one piece of advice that I would give myself today? I'm sorry, which one? How's it working?
If you could go back and offer your college self a piece of advice, what would it be? Aside from me, it would just lay off the bourbon.
Well, that would probably definitely be the best, I think. I mean, I think you do have, it's a cliche, but like the youth is wasted on the young. You know, you think like, oh, there you are. You have all of this time to learn anything you want, and you are smoking cigarettes outside the library, not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And so I just sort of feel like I would say, don't drink as much. I don't know. I don't think I would even say that. I would say, I mean, I do think being young and being able to handle drinking that much is a wonderful thing. I definitely couldn't do it now, so I'm glad I did it when I could. Smoking is the same story. And I feel like, so if I had to go back and give myself advice now, I mean, I think it would be, it's impossible because you're 18 and it would be to worry less about what other people are thinking, but it's impossible because you're a teenager still and so that's never going to happen. But if I could do it, that's what I would do. I would just say, you have this opportunity, do what you want and follow your heart. That's just, the cliches keep coming. but I do think I would say, don't worry so much about whether it's your achievements and what other people are going to think or where you're going to end up in terms of socially or academically, you know, you just can just explore without any kind of concern about those kinds of things. So anyway, and we have Lexi. Oh my God. Hi. She's calling in from Someone's calling in from the panel to hear me talk. Oh, all right. Anyway, bye.
Maria.
Maybe she's not a question.
Be back for 20.
Okay, I think I remember the question. Yeah, just to chill out. I think I stressed too much, mostly about, I think, grades and things like that. And I would have enjoyed myself maybe a little more. Some people might have enjoyed themselves too much, but I think I would have enjoyed myself a little more. And again, cliche, just living the moment. It's so hard. And I think that's the challenge for the rest of our lives, probably. I mean, I think now being a parent of young children, sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, can you just go potty, you know? But then you look back at that and you're like, you know, that was really funny. And I mean, it's just like, you sometimes you don't think you'll ever get through that. Like, you think you're going to send your daughter in diapers, which we did, to college. Like, we thought we were going to send her in diapers, which would have been fine, but she wouldn't have been attractive.
Totally. So. Great.
It's a good strategy, But just living that moment and finding the humor in it. And sometimes I think I take myself too seriously and just need to like chill out and let it go and laugh. So there you go.
Date more men. I spent too much time studying. Yeah.
Learning all sorts of things. I'm trying to think, aside from the easy on the bourbon, I said for some of those, as opposed to the obviously incredibly studious people on the panel, while I was riding the bus that Leonard was driving, but I do think there are some, I could have gone to one or two more lectures at 10 a.m. when the sun was shining, and there are other things to do. But I really liked your answer about the calm down. I think that's a good piece of advice today, too, as we go forward. What do you think, Leonard?
Ditto.
What's your... You're not getting off that easy.
Yeah, I think 100% I think I should have go to class more, study hard, take it more seriously. I mean, yeah, you are serious when you're here, obviously. You enjoy the experience. You're happy to be here. You're super excited. And but I think after a while, you kind of become a little jaded in a way. Like, oh, I can just skip that book. I'll just listen to the lecture, or I'll skim this paragraph and, you know, figure it out in the test. Oh, my God, it's multiple choice. Yay, you know. So I think that if I could give myself more advice now, drive the bus less, go to class more, date more men, chill out. Yeah.
I agree with everything that was said, almost everything. Maybe not.
It's college.
I hear you. just soak that one in for a second. Definitely chill out, try and enjoy the ride, enjoy the moment, all those things. I think I would probably tell myself of 22 to just trust yourself and don't constantly second guess what you're doing. I mean, when I made decisions that were truly my decisions that I owned, in my career, they always seemed to work out. I had no one to blame but myself if things didn't go well. If I was doing things for somebody else or the wrong reasons, that's when things seem to go awry. So I think it's just trust your instincts and things will work out.
Cool. So now we're going to open up to the audience for questions. Or comments. I'd be interested, actually, let's turn to you guys and ask that last question. What advice would you give your college self? And I know many of you, so if I know you, hi, Haley, you might get a question asked. What do you guys think? Haley.
Yeah, to know them.
I think as you're saying that too, I was engaging professors more both when you're in class and also outside of class. I remember towards the fourth year, you'd start getting, we were talking about this room and how much nicer this room is now than when we went to school with the like wood plank seating and looked like, you know, something from the gymnasium in Hoosiers and kind of all of those other types of things, but in the fourth year, we're, you know, in the government department, you finally get to take courses with a kind of a small amount of folks, and how much fun it was to actually go and be able to have those conversations and social conversations with professors. So I agree. Yes, the final one. Everyone's doing so many things. And one of the big things I think that's a huge part of my life and all of my friends is this whole mythical thing called work-life balance. And I want to ask my panel of overachievers up here, what, now that you've kind of gotten to this point, how do you do that? How do you balance your life between what you're doing? Because if you're going to be very successful, you're going to spend, just as Sarah was saying it, it's like I find that people who make a lot of money in general earn it, and earn it through a lot of working. But I'm interested in how you balance.
I think that you have to measure work-life balance not over on a daily basis. You have to measure it on like a quarterly basis or something like that. You know, you can't always get everything all the time, and life is just too complicated. And I think that kind of perspective has helped. When I was finishing my first book, I was pregnant with my first child. And I do not recommend trying to do both of those things at once, because it's just the deadline for the baby and the book were the exact same thing. And, of course, the baby came 2 weeks early, and I wasn't finished yet with the book. And so that was, like, such a test in work-life balance, because it was the most extreme version of it. I was on a massive deadline for a book, and my mother had to move like next door to take care of the baby while I was finishing, and I was like, this is not the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be Earth Mother, like hanging out with my daughter and, you know, singing lullabies and everything. Instead, I was like, you've got to take her because I have got to write this chapter. And I'm like, there's a lot of guilt that you could feel about that, and I definitely felt a lot of it, but now I've sort of let it go and realized that none of this is actually, I think, particularly in our generation, we beat ourselves up so much because we haven't achieved the perfect work-life balance. And in fact, kids don't know that they don't have different parents. You know, they have the parents they have. They love the parents they have, unless you've done something really terrible to them, which I'm sure I've done. And now, like, she'll be on the couch in like 20 years talking to her therapist about it. But generally, I think that I try not to worry so much about that on a day-to-day basis, because I just think we can't do it that way. I just don't think you can kill yourself in that respect.
Yeah, I think it's hard, even when you don't have a family, which I don't, just me. So I got a dog, and that makes me leave work at 5. You know, it's like, otherwise you could stay there all day if you don't have somebody at home waiting for you. And so I think it's really important that no matter what your life looks like, you still work on the balance, you still be conscious of it, and you still have great parents that can help you, because that's where she goes when I travel. Because otherwise it would be really boring to be at work all the time. I've done that.
I think my ex-wife would say I'm probably not the best person to ask this question. You know, my business doesn't leave really much room for anything else. When you're in the middle of a campaign, that's pretty much what you're doing, and your family becomes sort of your team. And I've spent more time, probably spent more time with the governor than of Virginia than anybody else in the last 12 years, and talking to him, traveling with him, et cetera, which is a little sad to think about. I mean, he's a great guy. I love him, but, you know, I think the more far along I've gotten in my career, I recognize what's important and what's not important professionally, and I can sort of separate that kind of stuff, and I'm able to turn it off, which I think, you know, 5-6 years ago I just was totally incapable of doing, and you know I'm able to turn it off. So I can't remember the last time we did turn it off, but we'll get to work on that. So it's a constant challenge. I'm actually getting married in 5 weeks. So thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. And she's been around the last 3 or 4 years, so she knows what she's getting into. And thankfully, I have an incredibly patient partner. And hopefully, there will be a time in my life where I'm not spending the bulk of my time on American and United and Southwest, but we'll see.
This is, you know, it's hard. You have to give up control in order to have balance, because it's just the way it is. And it's been hard for me to do that, you know, just to let things go and give up control. And and not have to be in control of everything and setting your expectations kind of on the low side, because I think that, you know, my tendency, at least for me, is to want to be able to do everything and want to do everything really well, and then it's just not possible and you're killing yourself for it and it's not worth it. So, you know, just kind of setting your expectations at a realistic level, maybe on the low side, so that you always come up, you know, come out on top. And just giving up that control and letting things go on with the flow a little bit. Join the ride a little bit more. So.
Everyone, I want to thank you so much. First off, I want to thank members of the panel for agreeing to participate today, and thank all of you for coming and participating today. It has been a lot of fun. This will be available as a podcast in case you want to hold it against any of us. Good luck with that. But thank you all very much for attending. Enjoy the rest of the reunions, and we'll see you at the dinner tonight.